Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. I hope you're well as can be expected after what we've seen over the last 7 days. Well, not even the last 7 days, what we saw last Sunday when Arsenal played Stoke at the Britannia Stadium. That really wasn't up to much, was it? Kind of depressing and dispiriting and dejecting and demotivating and delight. No, not delight, but just bad. And it really wasn't what we were hoping for, even though it might not have been too far from what some people were expecting. But those of you who listened last week will have heard I wore my heart on my sleeve very much, in the sense that I felt I tried to communicate, should I say, how much I disliked Stoke and everything about Stoke. The team, the manager, the fans, tea lady, the guy who marks the lines on the pitch, just everything. And I struggled, you know, I struggled last week to get that across. I think I might have left people in some doubt as to how I felt about it. But I knew what I was trying to say, and I was kind of confident that given everything that had happened, particularly last year with Aaron Ramsey and all that kind of stuff, I kind of figured that our team would be, you know, up for this one. Because even if you played football at a very poor level, like me, and like many of you, I'm sure, that there are teams, for example, that you know when you play them, it's going to be a bit tasty, right? There's teams you've come across in the past that you just want to beat because they're a pack of assholes. For example, a few weeks ago, we played a team, and they were all assholes, especially the fat asshole up front and the little skinny. He looked like Steve Buscemi crossed with Luka Modric, crossed with a famine victim with a giant hoopy earring in his ear, and he had this slick back hair, and he was a little cunt, and he was always, you know, mouthing. And we lost our discipline, in fairness, that day. We lost our discipline and lost the game. And I got kind of sent off a little bit, and two other people got kind of sent off a little bit as well. And that happens when you kick people up in the air and stuff, and the ref sees you. So I'm not trying to excuse anything. But what I'm saying is that the next time we play them, that we'll be a little cleverer in terms of the kicking in the air and stuff. But I am more determined than ever to beat them next time. Simply because I don't like any of them. I don't like their faces. I don't like their voices. I don't like the way they look. I just hate them, right? And I know, and the rest of the team knows, that when we play these guys again, we're going to be right up for it because we don't want to, you know, lose again. And it comes from the fact that, you know, we hate them. And I thought there might be a bit of that to the Arsenal team when we played Stoke because of the Ramsey thing and because of everything that has been said. And you know, you're going into the game on the back of the Manchester United win, and come on, we're going to be right up for this. And there wasn't anyone right up for it, apart from maybe Jack Wilshere. And even then, it wasn't necessarily channeled in the right way. It was more the getting sent off a little bit kind of way, which is fine at the moment. It happens, it's good and cathartic and you enjoy it, but then you kind of go, oh, anyway, I probably shouldn't have done that. And Jack was a little bit spiky, and I at least appreciated that from him. You know, at least he had that about him. The rest of them, even the ones you can normally rely on for a bit of get up and go and what have you, it just wasn't happening. And it was a sort of collective malaise throughout the team, and Stoke didn't have to try very hard to beat us. That's the worst thing about it. We were quite happy. We gifted them goals. We gifted them 3 goals. Second one maybe was quite good. little bit of a deflection and what have you, but, you know. But two of them were absolute gifts. And there just didn't seem to be enough motivation, or they just... You don't say they don't care, because that's not true, but they didn't maybe care enough on Sunday, and I found that quite depressing. Because even though the title challenge was well gone, there was still pride to play for, and points to play for, and important points to play for, and to go down like that, with not even a bang, with barely a whimper, like a mute dog that's been kicked. That's what we were like. We're sort of like... sort of a throaty sound. It was bad. I didn't enjoy it at all. There was nothing whatsoever to take from that performance that you could turn into a positive. Nothing. Not the result, not the way we played, not the way we were out fought, not the way we followed up a victory over Manchester United, not the way that this end of season lethargy that seems to overcome us is there again. That the lesson wasn't learned from last season or the season before, and it smacked of Wigan, and that was thoroughly depressing. But I don't hate Wigan the way I hate Stoke. And that made it even more depressing. Getting beaten by people you hate is really not much fun at all. So there's a nice cheery start to this week's Arsecast, isn't there? So anyway, before I bring on this week's guest, the rest of the week's roundup from Internet Joe.
Oh, I'm Internet Joe, and here's me 22nd roundup. I can't wait for this Stoke away, a chance for revenge. I hate these inbred, drooling cock donkeys. Oh, remember what happened last year? They're scummy fans. That wanker Shawcross, how he smashed Ramsey. I hate them. I want them to suffer. I bet the players do too. Stick up for their teammates. We want a fight, scrap, battle. Show them what we're made of. Show them we won't get fucked around. Show them that we are the Arsenal. Oh...
Even Internet Joe, the most positive man you can think of, is struggling with this Arsenal side. Oh well. Still to come in this week's show, we'll be looking ahead to the Villa game. As I'm recording this part of the Arsecast, there is no news in terms of the team. Maybe by the time I get around to that bit, there will be, but don't hold your breath. I will, of course, give you the answer to the competition for the exclusive Arseblog iPod Shuffle. Engraved and everything. I'll give you the winner of that from last week's podcast. We've got something from Mick Benner as well, I think. But now, joining me on the Arsecast from France Football, I'm delighted to welcome back Philippe Auclair. Hi, Philippe.
Hello, Mr. Arse Blogger.
Right, let's talk about Arsenal's performance against Stoke versus Arsenal's performance against Manchester United the previous week. If anything sums up the problems that exists with this Arsenal team, it's that they can play the champions elect and play well and beat them and not look under any real threat throughout the game, and the following week can't continue that good form or can't add any consistency to their game. Arsene talks about mental strength, this, that and the other, but how can he look at that and see the lack of motivation or the lack of will to win that game? Especially, and I know it's not the main thing, but especially considering what happened there last year with Aaron Ramsey.
I think that the performance in itself was probably the most pitiful we've seen this season, with the 0-0 draw against Blackburn. But it was in many ways more depressing. But it was quite extraordinary to see that, because I thought before the game, as I think many people who follow Arsenal, that this was a crucial game, not because of staying in the title race. Everybody knew that the title was out of reach, but to stay in the hunt for the third place and avoid what would be disastrous fourth place and having to go through the preliminary round of the Champions League. So it was a game which had, a huge amount of significance for the future of the club. And it seemed that even though you could use as an excuse the fact that a number of natural, first teamers were missing, it seemed that almost nobody had turned up. And even the substitutions at halftime, which is pretty dramatic by Arsene Wenger's standard to bring in, Bentner and Chamakh on 45 minutes when he generally always waits until the 60th or 65th minute to bring any substitutions. Even that didn't have the required effect. So you felt a group of players for whom basically the season was over and who were nursing the longest hangover in the history of football since that defeat against Birmingham City in the League Cup final. So yes, it was a very worrying performance, worrying in the view of what's coming. The game against Aston Villa is not going to be an easy one. Neither is going to be Fulham on the last day of the Premier League, when we all know what Mark Hughes thinks of Arsene Wenger and vice versa. So I was really amazed by the behavior of some of the players. And I must say that something happened which is very unusual for me when I watch Arsenal. I kind of switched off and watched the game in a very detached fashion, which showed how little I was expecting, how little reaction I was expecting from that team. And it, apart from a couple of players, I would say Wojciech Szczęsny, who had yet again an excellent game, and Laurent Koscielny, who certainly didn't disgrace himself, all of the others didn't show the kind of resolve you must expect from Arsenal players. So yes, it was a very, very worrying performance. And the fact that it happened just after the game against Manchester United, I think tells you a lot about the psychological setup of that team. That they certainly have pride. They certainly battle. I don't doubt that for a second. But they saw, in a way, after having beaten Manchester United, in a way, their job was done. That they had proved that they could live with the big boys, as they had done against Chelsea, as they had done against Barcelona, the Emirates. And that was enough. And, of course, that is not enough. And which, in a way, was a reprise of what we've seen so many times this season, when Arsenal were given chances to come back into the league title chase. And every single time, fluff their lines.
It's not just this season, though, is it? Because it's been an ongoing problem for a number of seasons now. And you have to, I mean, the worry is, of course, is that this flaw that the team has comes directly from Arsene Wenger. And that you're looking for somebody to fix something that he's responsible for, in a way, that perhaps he's not necessarily capable of fixing.
Well, I don't know if he's the kind of manager who actually is very good at rousing his players like that. What he's been very good at in the past has been to identify players who didn't need that kind of rousing, but were doing it themselves. I mean, go through the invisible steam and you will see almost every single one of these guys was a winner. You needn't tell Patrick Vieira or Dennis Bergkamp that they had to fight, or Tony Adams or Lauren or Saul Campbell. These people had it in their DNA. The problem is that the path on which Wenger has embarked since we moved to the Emirates, which is basically to create a nucleus of players, develop them, and turn them into an extraordinarily efficient outfit, seems to have reached the ceiling. But what is particularly disappointing about this season is that we thought some lessons had been learned, and there were signs, actually, in the first month of the season that this team had fighting qualities that maybe we hadn't seen before. I mean, they actually, away from home, their performances were, on the whole, apart from the game at Bolton and the game at Stoke, were excellent. And they actually, if you look at the away classification, you will see Arsenal on top of that table. So that is a sign that there is some strength, mental strength, as Wenger keeps talking about it. And that, which the reason why people are so disappointed, and far more than that actually this season, it's a different kind of disappointment from what happened, for example, in 2007, 2008, or the season after that. Yeah. And so what we're seeing at the moment, you know, this old truism, the table doesn't lie, Arsenal is third. There's a genuine threat that Arsenal might finish fourth, which would be quite disastrous. But, you know, the qualities haven't disappeared. These players are no less skillful than they were a year ago. They should be more experienced and so forth. But it doesn't show on what they're producing on the pitch. And, of course, immediately people will turn towards the manager, and quite rightly so, as I'm sure Arsene Wenger must be questioning himself and what he can get from these players.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about Arsene's approach and you talk about the way he managed the Invincibles, you don't need to tell Patrick Vieira to fight, you don't need to tell Dennis Bergkamp to fight. It's slightly naive then to think that you can take the same approach with young players who are learning the game. And we know that he likes to...
And who's never won anything.
Yeah, but he likes to... work with a player's intelligence and let him work out problems for himself, and he views that as a learning process or a way in which he needs to develop them. But, I mean, that perhaps, amongst other things, is an area that Arsene Wenger needs to change. And we can go back and talk about how the mix of experience and youth hasn't been quite right, that the younger players haven't necessarily had anyone to learn from. Yes. And I think that's an issue, and that's probably something that needs to change. But perhaps Arsene's attitude towards some of these players needs to change as well, because you do get the sense, well, I certainly get the sense, that some of them are indulged because he's put so much time in educating them, developing them as yes. footballers and as players, that he's at a point where he's sort of undecided, where he wouldn't necessarily treat an experienced player the same way as he would one of these younger players, because he looks at what he's put into them, and the last thing he wants is for them to go away and sort of all of a sudden the caterpillar becomes a butterfly at a different team, that they peak somewhere else after getting their education at Arsenal. But at the same time, unless there's a measure of accountability with those young players, because mm-hmm. they are indulged, it doesn't create the right kind of work environment for them to develop to the players that he wants them to be winners, because some of them clearly aren't.
Well, that's obvious, and we could name names, and we don't need to name names because everybody knows them. I think there's several things here. First, there's a question of personal pride, because if Wenger admits that actually, yes, he's reached the limit with a number of these players, it's basically his whole project that is thrown in jeopardy. Because the whole project is based on the idea of technical continuity and getting people to grow from the inside. It can be done. I'm not saying this is the wrong philosophy by any means. If you look, for example, what's happened in Germany with Borussia Dortmund, you will see a group of very young players who discovered a thirst for success, very skillful, very well-organized team, and they got this winning mentality, and they got it by winning game after game after game to become champions of Germany with an average age, I think, of 22 or something ridiculous like that.
Right.
So it can be done with young players who haven't done anything before. The problem is that the core of this team has been in place for a number of years now. All these players have been there for four or five seasons. During these four or five seasons, it's been the same thing over and over and over again. And the lack of natural bosses in each line, you need one per line, is something that Wenger doesn't quite recognize. Very often the question has been put to him, and I've put the question to him myself, is that, you know, it seems this Arsenal team is lacking the bosses on the field, the people who are going to shout at each other, the people who are going to make sure that on a corner kick or a free kick, everybody's in position and covering the right player, which is really, I mean, you know, this is schoolboy stuff, really. It's really ridiculous. And he's always said that he believed in collective responsibility and that everybody was a boss in a way, which is, you know, philosophically and ethically a very commendable point of view, but in football, I'm afraid, simply doesn't work. And what we have is we have players shirking the responsibilities. And one of the most telling signs of that, from a technical and tactical point of view, you have to look at the way players pass the ball and where they're asking the ball. Much has been made of Arsenal possession, for example, including against Stoke and against most teams this season, apart from Barcelona, the new camp. You will notice that they will go for fairly safe passes, that players will back off from a position where they have to engage into a physical duel with an adversary to create some space. This is not the way to do it. The way to do it is the way Jack Wilshere does it, which is basically you create space by confronting your rival and skipping past him, and the space is created at that moment. Cesc Fabregas is also a master at doing that. Now, very few other players are actually willing to take on that responsibility. They choose the easy option, the easy pass. So you've got this situation where all teams are basically playing back in their 30 yards, and you pass the ball laterally, and, you know, some of it can look quite easy on the eye, but it also becomes quite boring very quickly. Mm. And you don't have many players who are willing just to take that extra risk. The tempo of Arsenal has been wrong this season, and that's one, technically speaking, that's been a major problem. Mm. It's been too slow, too many touches, too lateral, As well, what we're missing tremendously, and everybody remembers Freddie Ljungberg and Robert Pires, and we all remember them, is the fact that hardly anybody is making runs in the box anymore from midfield. Semyon has redid it for a while, but he's completely, I mean, his season has crumbled. It's absolutely terrible what's happened to him over the past couple of months or so. Yes. So you put all that together, and you've got both, it's technical and mental at the same time. And I think I'm probably leading to something that you would like to talk about. This situation could be redressed if Arsene Wenger had around him people who could address this question as well as he does. Just like, for example, Martin Keown did in 2005-2006.
Well, this is what I was going to come to, because you talked about Arsenal's tempo not being quick enough and people not taking risks and reasons why things haven't gone right this season, and you never even mentioned the defensive side of Arsenal's game, which is clearly an issue. What I want to ask you, though, is you talk about Keown, and maybe one of the things that people talk about is a defensive coach or more yes. defensive coaching. If we look at Arsene, and I think even the most staunch defenders of Arsene Wenger will accept that he has got to change certain things this summer. Personnel, in terms of the team, yes. that he's got to cut his losses with some of the players that he has invested time in, whether that hurts his pride or not, for the benefit of Arsenal Football Club, he's got to do that. Secondly, we're looking at perhaps a new number two, because we know that maybe Pat Rice is retiring at the end of the season, so a new number two, a new focus perhaps on defensive coaching, a new attitude with the players, that they won't be indulged as much. So, that, I mean, across the board, there is a spectrum of things that people want to see from Arsene Wenger. Is that a lot to expect a man, and you've spoken before, and pretty much anybody who speaks to him and knows him and the way he operates professionally will say that he is a very...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Stubborn man. Is that not, if we all sort of accept that this has got to happen to make Arsenal better, to improve the team, is it not too much to expect from Arsene Wenger? If you see where I'm coming from.
I see where you're coming from. That's a big one. Because while you were saying that, I was thinking that in a way, the situation that Arsenal faces at the moment is not dissimilar to the situation Monaco faced at the end of Wenger's stay there. I mean, he was there for quite a while, as you know. Started with a team that was very strong. I mean, if you look at the players he had, it was absolutely remarkable. You know, people like Georges Weah, for example. I mean, he had a superb team to work with. And in the first few years, he was absolutely terrific there, absolutely magnificent. Probably should have won far more than one single title. Yes. Maybe he should have won a European Cup, but circumstances, I mean, there's this famous Cup Winners' Cup final against Werder Bremen, which happened just a couple of days after an absolute awful tragedy in French football at Furiani, and the players were not up for it. But at the end of his stay there, there were signs which were quite similar to what is happening now, in that he trusted some very young players to come through. I mean, this is actually the season that he gave Thierry Henry his debut in professional football when he was just 17. Not a bad choice, by the way. but there were signs that there was fatigue sitting in there, and that he had come to the end of basically the solutions, and he couldn't find any other. Now, what we need And I think what everybody wants is or are statements of intent. And they can take several shapes. The statement of intent can be the recruitment of a new number two that will actually challenge Arsene Wenger at times when need be. The second type of statement is obviously by, one, getting rid of some players. And again, we don't need to name names. We all know who they are.
Yeah.
And bringing in some players who, in profile, experience, will actually give a lift to that team. And most importantly, it seems to me, to the people who go to the Emirates every other Saturday or Sunday.
Sure.
Because the mood at the stadium is dire. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, we've noticed. I mean, there were some magnificent nights this season, and we should never forget that. I mean, the 2-1 against Barcelona was probably the first great night that we've had at the Emirates, you know, greater than the, you know, the victories against Manchester United. It was absolutely electric. And you thought, why isn't it like that all the time? Well, the reason is because people have started to doubt, because people are, you know, very fickle as well at Arsenal. But they want those statements. We've got all this money, you know. I mean, okay, I can understand it's very laudable not to spend it on something stupid. On the other hand, when it's fairly obvious that you need an extra central defender, that you need an extra central midfielder, and especially, in my view, that you need a proper goal scorer, despite the fact that Van Persie has scored 20 goals this season, that's three big signatures, you know, you want to have at the bottom of contracts. My understanding of it is that actually moves are afoot, and that targets have been identified, and that there's a lot of effort being put in by Wenger and by the club to recruit some fairly big players. Now, how big they are, I can't really tell you at the moment. But it's what we need, what the team needs, what the fans need, are those statement signings that we're here not just to make up the numbers and to keep up to keep this nice sixth or seventh spot in the UEFA classification.
Sure.
We want to be there at the very top. It's absolutely needed that Arsene does something of the kind. But the problem is, you know, he will take the decision, and who is there to tell him what to do? And you have to now put this in the context of the new ownership pyramid, where you have Stan Kroenke. Now, does Kroenke want to shake up things? To what extent does he want to shake up things?
Well, that was the point I was just going to make. Is it? I mean, we want these statements of intent from the manager, but the manager is the manager of the football team. The board are responsible for the football club. So is it not incumbent on the board to also make a statement of intent, in the sense that they ultimately hire and fire the manager?
Yes.
They realise, I'm sure, that things are not right at the club. They realise that fans are not happy. They realise that there's huge pressure on Arsene Wenger. People have spoken before about him lacking somebody to do the David Dean role, the director of football role. Now, I'm not advocating the return of David Dean, but perhaps somebody who can do that job, who Arsene gets along with, who Arsene trusts, who Arsene respects, but ultimately who has his own job and is his own man and can do that. The board have got a bit of responsibility here as well, that they need perhaps to put a little bit of pressure on Arsene Wenger to say, the team is good to a point, but it's not good enough. And that you are the man that has to go and solve this. Because, you know, we could be sitting here in 12 months' time.
Yes.
And if we're trophyless again, the things aren't going to be any better.
Now, the fact that Kroenke is in place, if you look at his past in American sports, he's somebody who tends to favor the longer innings. I mean, he's not somebody who is going to, you know, bring substitutions on the 12th minute. He would rather wait a few games and see how it goes. So my feeling would be that he's going to stick to the current formula at the moment, but his patience can sometimes snap very, very quickly. There were examples of that. I was talking to a few American friends of mine about his track record in American sports, and they said, well, he's very loyal, very faithful to his coaches, managers, give them the best chance. But once he's taken a decision, he's absolutely implacable, and he does it very, very quickly. He moves very, very swiftly. So the problem is that Kroenke is not really a football man. I don't think he knows very much about Arsenal Football Club. I don't think he knows very much about football full stop, even if he's tried to learn and done his best and so forth. But he's not somebody who's steeped in football. Far less, for example, than John W. Henry at Liverpool, who seems to have a fair understanding of what the club is about. I don't get this feeling with Stan Kroenke at all. I'm just wondering if one of the questions he's asking himself is, well, if we got rid of Arsene Wenger, which is the question I'm asking you and I'm asking everybody and I'm asking myself, well, who would you take?
Of course, change is scary, and it is one of those questions that people throw. Who would you hire to replace Arsene Wenger? I don't have to answer that, and you don't have to answer that. Neither of us do. We simply have to live with it and react to it. But,
yes.
You know, that the issue of his future is certainly up in the air at the moment, I think. I don't expect anything to change. I certainly don't expect anything to change this summer. But I think going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's the combination of statements that we need from Arsene himself and from the club to show that they want success and that they're willing to challenge the manager as well. I think that's really important.
Well, indeed, but the club hasn't been particularly good in its communication recently. I mean, I don't know if it is a consequence of, you know, the takeover by Stan Kroenke, the fact that Usmanov has said very clearly he wouldn't sell his shares, the fact that the Arsenal Supporters Trust has come up as well, saying that it was very important to keep, you know, diverse ownership and so forth. It's a very strange climate. This and the attitude of people at the ground. I mean, I've been at every single home game this season, and you wonder, you know, well, what exactly can you do? And you come up with the answer, well, probably the best thing to do is for Arsene Wenger to stay in place, to realize that there is one moment where he needs to change his policy, and that, yes, it's all right to spend money. It's all right to spend money, Arsene. We've got it. That's all right. We didn't need to raise up the season ticket prices, which was probably one of the most catastrophic decisions taken by the club in recent memory. I'm pretty sure that you would feel the same way about it. I think it's totally absurd. You know, when the club is cash flow positive, when the fans are really struggling, when we already have... We don't have the most expensive season tickets in the country. Actually, Liverpool have this title, if you can believe it. But it was the wrong signal to send, to send, particularly at a time when people were criticizing the club and the manager so openly. And one thing that really worries me, and that's, you know, from somebody who's also been at most press conferences with Arsene Wenger this season, is that his attitude has changed. I find him very defensive, borderline paranoid, in his dealings with the press, feeling under threat, always defending his players and his decisions. After most games where things didn't quite go Arsenal's way, very often, you know, we always come back to the same thing, talking about the mental strength of the team and this and this and that and the progress which has been made. And it's a record that we've heard so many times that it's getting boring. And the thing as well, this means there has been a breakdown in the relationship between Arsenal and the mass media in this country. And which, of course, is just a detail, but it's a telling detail. Mm. We've lost some of the goodwill that the media had. We've lost some of the goodwill, maybe some referees had as well, because there's been so much vituperation and criticism of this and this and that, and the incapacity of looking things in the face and saying, well, we did this wrong. The players didn't do what they should have been doing. You know, don't, Arsene, please, you know, when Bollock, a player, Bollock Danielson, when he's not capable of passing the ball forward for 90 minutes, you know, what's wrong with it? Mm. But you can sense that there's so much pride in what he has done. He's invested so much of himself, selflessly, that he can't quite face up to that. In private, I'm sure he thinks about it all the time, but he has to pass this moment And it's not too late for that. When he is able to realize that, yes, he can make mistakes too. And it's not when people say, Arsene, maybe you made a mistake here, that they're against him or against the club. Sometimes they might just try to help. Mm. But unfortunately, he's been put in a position throughout the years because of the departure of David Dean, because of Dennis Sisman's been ill, because of the problems in the board, the vacancy of power within the board, where he's basically the only master on board. And anything that is threatening or criticizing his position is something he takes extremely badly. And I can understand that, you know, from a personal point of view. I can totally understand that. It's a kind of cabin fever, isn't it?
Sure.
Is there a better man to lead Arsenal forward? I'm not too sure about that. All I'm hoping is that there will be something happening in Arsene's mind that will unlock a few problems which have been here for a very long time.
All right, Philippe, we better leave it there. It's going to be very interesting because clearly a lot needs to happen this summer, and not just with the checkbook and from everything you're talking about. It does make you wonder, but we better leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. Really interesting as always.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed to Philippe Auclair from France Football, who does indeed make my job recording the Arsecast an awful lot easier when he's on. We'll have him back next season, and there is a huge amount to do this summer, isn't there? When you think about it and you step back and you look at what needs to happen and what actually needs to happen, not just what we want to happen, but what needs to happen and what is probably going to happen, it's kind of daunting, but it's also quite exciting. And the more I speak to people and the more information I get from people, the more I'm convinced it's going to be a really, really busy summer at Arsenal in terms of comings and goings, in terms of just things in general that are going to happen at the football club. We're talking about new number twos and maybe new approaches and who knows what else, but I think it is going to be a really, really busy summer. And for those of us that have to produce a blog every day, that's quite the godsend. I'd rather it was a quieter summer and we were sitting around basking in the glow of trophies, but there you go, beggars, choosers, and all that kind of stuff. Still to come, competition info, and we'll be looking ahead to the Villa game in a very brief fashion, because there's still very little team news. Right now, though, this fella.
It's the Mick Benner Show with me, Mick Benner. Oh, I'm deadly.
Hello there, I'm Mick Benner, and I'm the greatest striker to ever live. I'm better than David Villa, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, and Thore-Andre Flo. Before I embarked on my highly successful footballing career, I was also an inventor. It's true. Look around your house, at your computer. I invented the inkjet printer, or the CD burner, the Hoover. In your kitchen, I done the cooker, the toaster, the mixer, and the blender. I also invented clothes that you might wear, like the Aaron jumper. People said, oh my god, Mick Benner, you're so awesome. We can't believe you thought to do that with sheep's wool, and you made the Aaron jumper. You're amazing. I also invented things that you wear on your feet as well, like the sneaker, or highly charged weapons in space, like lightsaber. But there's one thing down all the years that I wished I'd invented, but I never got around to. Do you know what it was? An invisible cloak that shoot poison-tipped exploding hedgehogs. That'd have been epic, like.
It's the Mick Benner Show with me, Mick Benner. Oh, I'm deadly.
Okay, time for the competition from last week's 200th Arsecast, and the prize was an exclusive Arseblog engraved iPod shuffle. As you can hear, that is actually an iPod shuffle and not a box of Bic pens that I'm rattling around. And the question I asked you was something about which man in what was the recurring character on the Arsecast. The man in the grocery store, the man in the bar, the man in the hardware shop, something, something, something. And of course the answer was the man in the bar. Thank you very much to the person who entered and said the man from East Lower. I guess I had to accept that as the right answer as well. However, it wasn't the answer that was picked out. The winner, as selected by the random number generator, is
Milton Brown from Jamaica. So well done to you, Milton Brown from Jamaica. I will be in touch and we'll get this exclusive box of Bic pens out to you in the post as soon as we possibly can. And remember, if you do want to get your hands on one of these exclusive Arseblog iPod Shuffles, you can do that by going to store.arseblog.com. Anything that is bought in the store, from a mug to a print to a t-shirt, goes into a draw every single month to win one of these Arseblog iPods. So do check it out. If you fancy one, just buy something from the store. Keep Arseblog alive. Keep me in gruel and Tesco value whiskey. It's store.arseblog.com. So have at it. Now, there is no team news ahead of Sunday's game against Aston Villa. Manchester City's win over Spurs during the week means that they're qualified for at least Champions League qualification round. And there's only 2 points between us and Manchester City. So we've got to really make sure that we win this game on Sunday against Aston Villa. I believe Cesc will be back and there is some hope over Nasri as well. I don't know what to say about the game. What can you predict? Which Arsenal will turn up? Hopefully a better Arsenal than the one we saw against Stoke. When we've wanted them to respond in general, they kind of have responded. Villa have nothing whatsoever to play for. And we do need to make sure that we get third spot. So a win is absolutely crucial. And that doesn't guarantee us third spot either, because we could go to the final game of the season. Man City, I don't know who they're playing, but we're playing Fulham away and not always an easy game. So we are going to have to be on our toes for the last two games and make sure that we finish third. Because anything less than that would just be a pain in the fucking hole, I think you would say. Couple of small things. There's this walk organized by the Where Has Our Arsenal Gone group, the Black Scarf movement. And it seems to have taken on a life of its own. I think I gave my opinion on the Black Scarf thing on the blog, and it seems to have been hijacked a little bit by people who want to make it into an anti-Arsene Wenger or a Wenger out protest. And I was speaking to one of the guys from the Black Scarf crowd, and they were keen to stress that it was not a Wenger out protest. It was a walk to show that they were dissatisfied with various things at the club that were in the manifesto that they published. So that's entirely up to them, of course, but it's not, from their point of view anyway, a Wenger out protest. Whether it develops into that remains to be seen, and we'll have to see what happens. And also the lap of appreciation thing at the end, and I know there's talk of people doing things like turning their back on the players and walking out, and that's fine, lots of people will leave, but I thought the point of the lap of appreciation was for the players to show their appreciation to the fans. They're not going around on a lap of honour looking for kudos for what they did this season. I suspect the vast majority of them will be kind of embarrassed by it, at doing it, given the way everything has happened. And they're not looking for applause, they're looking to thank the fans for their support. And maybe that's just something that's worth remembering. That's all. So here we are, final home game of the season coming up on Sunday. Who knows? Could go anyway, couldn't it? Could be fantastic, could be absolutely terrible. And, well, we'll just have to live with whatever it is. And hopefully next week's Arsecast will be slightly cheerier than this one. So until then, take it easy. Have yourself a good weekend. Fingers crossed for 3 points and a cheerier performance than last Sunday's. That's it then. What's the bit? What do I do now? Until next week's Arsecast, yes, cheers. Bye-bye.
Hello everyone, Tony Adams here with another poem on the Arsecast. This week I read in the newspaper with shock and dismay about Paul Merson talking about injections that he had got from Arsene Wenger. It inspired me to write this poem. It is called Pointy Sticky Thing, and it goes a little bit like this. Oh, poor Merson, you're a great person, but you should have kept your mouth shut. All those injections were for our career resurrections. You should have had some more. Oh, Merce, you were never averse to hearing my verse. But now, I hope you work with Phil Thompson forever. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.